Welcome to Multifamily AP 360, the show where we discuss 360-degree views on mindset, passive, and active multifamily investment. If you're looking for tips and strategies, or just want to learn from the experiences of others, both good and bad, then listen on. This is Multifamily AP 360 with your host, Ramakrishna Chinchu.
Welcome to another episode of Multifamily AP 360. And today's our guest is Jimmy Edwards from HiFiMultifamily.com. So with that, Jimmy, welcome. And a little bit about Jimmy. Jimmy, full-time real estate investor, over 15 years of experience, including property valuation, underwriting, loan origination, rehab, asset management, finance, marketing, and sales. So with that, Jimmy, welcome. And you want to add anything to your background?
No, thanks for the introduction. I've been in real estate for almost 20 years now and a little bit of every part of it. So I love it.
Awesome. How did you get into real estate and why?
I attended Texas Tech University and I started out in engineering and eventually changed degrees into finance. And towards the last semester, I took some real estate classes and my degree ended up being finance with an emphasis in real estate. And one of the classes, Intro to Real Estate, professor had us read Rich Dad Poor Dad, and it just completely changed my mindset and, you know, propelled me in the direction I am today. So yeah, I graduated, finished my real estate license, sold some condos in Houston, eventually got my loan originator license, and then started flipping houses and now into multifamily. So
awesome. So why you went from, you know, initial real estate single families to, you know, mortgage side, then why you shifted to multifamily?
So I started in 2006 and I moved to Houston and I was selling high-rise condominiums to investors, you know, blocks of five, blocks of 10, new construction type deals where, you know, we had increasing prices over time. And around 2009, you know, things started to change. People were struggling to get financing. And I had an opportunity up here in Dallas to join a mortgage company, you know, kind of right as things were starting to change and interest rates started to go down. So I kind of rode that wave from 2009 to 2012 and just did refinances, you know, that, you know, a lot of these government programs where you didn't need an appraisal because everyone was losing their jobs. And then it was awesome, man. Got to help a lot of people. And then 2012, they closed down our Texas branch for reasons not related to the market. But, you know, I was one of the top loan officers, had a really good team. And, you know, I'd always kind of had a job before I left the job. And all of a sudden, you know, it was out of my control. And so shortly after, you know, I cashed out all my accounts and had about $70,000. I bought a $60,000 house, put 10 into it and sold it for 90. And I was like, okay, you know, this will work. So we did that for 5-6 years, did about 100 houses. You know, and you, as you go through the process, you try to figure out, you know, how you're going to scale each year. How can I do better than last year? How can I improve? How can we, you know, be more consistent and make more profits, right? And single family is hard because you have houses all over the place. You have different contractors and, you know, and then I learned about multifamily. You know, you can have one building and you can have maintenance guy. And not only that, but, you know, forcing appreciation really made a lot more sense to me, right? Because in single family, you know, you've got to go on the appraisal and, you know, all of these things that are, again, sometimes out of your control. So started with the 16 unit deal, completely re-tenanted it. I think, you know, when we bought it, rents were like 500. And when we sold it, they were 1200. I mean, it was, you know, should have been a condemned building. And bought a couple more deals like that, 100 unit deal that was 50% occupied, another deal that was 70% occupied. We 1031'd into that deal. So, you know, just utilizing some of the practices like 1031 to keep your money going and gain momentum. And, you know, we had maybe 3 or 4 deals in 2020 and learned a lot from that experience. And then, you know, sold a couple of them in 21 and 22 and bought one in 21 and 22. So, you know, just really looking for deals right now. You know, I'm pretty thankful that we executed our business plans and the timing that we did. So
awesome. So you mentioned how you guys did heavy lifting, like 50% occupancy, 75% occupancy, right? Why you guys selected, you know, that kind of distressed properties? You know, how exactly you guys executed business plan?
You know, coming from flipping houses, your brain is a little bit geared towards, you know, looking for something that's in physical distress, right? You know, we know how to do that. And so, you know, we went to the bank and said, hey, this is the deal we want to do. And we negotiated a good price. You know, on one of them, the seller had to bring $500,000 to closing to pay down the loan because purchase price was less than what he owed. So, you know, it's unfortunate for some people, but we've found luck in those opportunities. And through the process, I think we've recognized that, you know, you can still have a distressed property that may not have a lot of deferred maintenance. It's operationally distressed, right? And so, you know, that's been very important learning curve over time, right? So yeah, I mean, that deal, we went and toured it and we saw, you know, a couple nice units, got it under contract. And then when we came back and we toured the 50 vacants, I mean, you know, 90% of those were really rough, right? And so our budget went up and, you know, we had to come back and say, hey man, like, you know, the seller, the broker nor the seller knew how bad condition those vacant units were. So yeah, I mean, we had lots of documentation. We had to put together all this stuff and we're like, hey, look, like this is, you know, a lot different than I think than all of us think. We don't ever want to come in and retrade a deal on purpose. But, you know, in a situation like that, it's like, hey, you know, here's what it's going to take. And they agreed that, you know, it was in bad shape. So, you know, when you buy a property like that, it was 103 units. It was about 50% occupied when we got it. And it ended up going down to about 38%, something like that. I mean, you know, there's going to be, you know, sometimes when an owner is at 50% occupancy, they need to keep sometimes tenants that you wouldn't normally keep if you're at 90 to 95%, right? And so we had to clean house a little bit and, you know, we found a lot of interesting things. I mean, you know, that property, the pool was green. You know, at one point we had a roof leak and we opened up the ceiling and there's a 5-gallon Home Depot bucket sitting on the rafter collecting water, you know, just like weird skeletons in the closet. You know, the AC blowers in the unit didn't have ducting. So like, people were just running the AC all day long. It wasn't getting cold because it was going into the attic, just weird things. So, you know, that really helped us, you know, be mindful when we're looking at new properties about the budget, right? I mean, you know, to be successful, you can weather any storm as long as you have time and capital, right? So, you know, I think that, you know, getting loans that exceed the timing of your business plan and having more capital for unknowns.
Got it. How long it took you guys to stabilize that property?
I think it was just a little under 2 years. Yeah. You know, probably more than a year, maybe a year and a half, something like that.
Okay.
So we had anticipated it taking, you know, 24 months. So we had reserves to, you know, pay for expenses since it wasn't cash flowing.
Yeah. And what kind of business plan you guys implemented? What kind of renovation budget for, you know, interiors or exteriors or per unit basis? Can you throw some numbers there?
At the time, you know, this was in 2018. You know, I think we had between 5,000 and maybe 7,000 or 8,000, you know, for unit turns, but it was a pretty hefty budget. I think we had like 700,000, you know, 200 or 300 of that was probably for interiors, you know, and then we had pool and paint and landscaping and, you know, all of these things and a lot of contingency money. You know, a lot of those units ended up being a couple that cost 10, 12 grand, right? Because they were so bad. But it allowed us to offer premium upgraded units, right? I mean, if you're going into a unit that's gutted and you're going to redo it, you know, materials are almost the same to make it just a little bit nicer and potentially get premium rents, right? So we kind of picked out the easy turns and just got classics available. And then the harder turns, you know, we did the rehab for a renovated unit and we changed the name. We had to rebrand. It wasn't good online. And, you know, we went through one or two management companies. The previous owner had 4 or 5 management companies in there because they didn't have money. So the manager couldn't really do their job. And so there was a lot of turnover. And we came in with a management company, ended up changing, and then killed it once we had the right team in place. So, you know, I think that managing the management company and having an A-plus company can really make the difference, right? I mean, you got to be aligned with your business plan. And sometimes, you know, management companies have a different idea and you got to switch.
Yeah, got it. So did you guys use third party for renovation or you have your own in-house construction or renovation team?
We did the GC in-house. My business partner, Catherine, her background is in construction management. And so, you know, we pretty much GC'd ourselves and, you know, she handled the subcontractors. So that allowed us to, you know, save money, but also be hands-on to know where expenses are going, where the problems are, you know, and really be present as owners. So, you know, I think that, you know, it helped us save money, right? The budget was a little bit thinner than, you know, if we'd hired a big GC company. So, you know, we're full time. And so, you know, for us, it makes sense to be hands on so that we can, you know, control the asset.
Got it. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, definitely you'll get some advantages with, you know, using in-house construction team. So the question is like, how to find good property management company?
Referrals, really. I think getting referrals from friends and understanding, you know, where their success has come from. You know, we've built a lot of relationships over the past, you know, decade. And again, I think it's important, you know, knowing who you're working with, what their style is, and making sure that you're aligned. I mean, you know, some of the management companies that we use might not be the right fit for someone else, right? And I would say probably everyone is that the management company has an owner's mindset, right? And, you know, using a management company that has owned deals and, you know, thinks like an owner, I've found is really important. You know, we've had some bigger companies and we thought that, you know, there'd be scale there, right? With, you know, they'd have benefits of discounted pricing across several service providers and vendors. And we found that with some of them, you know, they were just not spending our money in the right places. And so, you know, really finding someone with an ownership mindset, you know, payroll is important. We need really good people. So we're going to pay extra, but here's some other expenses that, you know, we don't really need, right? I mean, do we need to spend $2,000 a month on apartments.com, or is our manager capable of, you know, posting on Facebook for free every day, right? So like, you know, that are mindful of how to be cost efficient.
So where do you guys get more success in terms of leasing, apartments.com or free Facebook ads or anything else?
Yeah, for us has really been, Facebook has been really good, Facebook Marketplace. Apartments.com is, you know, I think we have like a small package on one of our deals, but I think really like another big thing is resident referrals, right? So, you know, if we have a really good manager and a really good maintenance guy, it should be a lot easier to keep your residents happy. And then when your residents are happy, they're going to tell their friends. So we have a referral program, you know, where if they were, you know, you really want people to live in a community with their friends, right? Like that's where you get the word community, you know? And so we try to do like monthly events, you know, Easter egg hunt, you know, back to school drive, Christmas with Santa, you know, all these different things to build community, you know, pool parties, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that if you're leading with the residents in mind, you know, a lot of time your bottom line will increase. You know, we buy a lot of deals from owners that their first place they cut cost is on payroll. That's where they think they can cut costs. And those deals end up not going well because, you know, you got to have the right people in there to take care of the residents.
Yeah, definitely you need full attention, especially, you know, managing these multifamily properties, right? So what did you see in the market in the last 2 years, like 24 months?
It was tough for us. One of our deals in the end of 2022, we had a lot more evictions than we anticipated. And we were really good at, you know, in 2020 and 2021, we were really good at getting rental assistance. You know, we told our managers, hey, put the packet together, hunt down the resident, get their signature, help them submit it. You know, let's help our residents, right? Because they may not know what to do. And we ended up losing a lot of people that just never were able to make it to the next step and get a job again and all these things after they had the assistance. So we had a handful of evictions in the last quarter of 2022. And, you know, 23, we spent the first two quarters filling it back up and it wasn't fun, but, you know, we're at 96, 97% now and residents are happy and, you know, it's running along. So, you know, I think there's going to be challenges in any market with any property. And, you know, sometimes there's going to be things you don't expect, but, you know, if you have a good team, you can overcome those hurdles. So as far as the property side, again, just having the right team. And, you know, I think there's, you know, we encountered a lot of people that were like, the market's fallen, you know, as far as rents and occupancy and all these things. And, you know, I think that when you have an A+ team, like you can always exceed what the market's doing, right? So like we really try to just be better than our competition. And that's been good for us. As far as finding deals, that's been tough. You know, we're light on assets right now. We've got dry powder, like we're looking for deals. You know, there's a spread between what the sellers need or want between, you know, what we can realistically pay. So it's been tough, you know, but we're still hunting. And, you know, I think there's still some good opportunities out there. So,
yeah. So do you see a lot of deals during 23 and 20, early 24, maybe 22?
I saw a lot of deals that I thought were deals, right? You know, you'll talk to the owner, you'll talk to the broker, and it sounds, you're like, oh man, like that sounds like a good deal. And then you underwrite it. And, you know, there's been a handful of times where like, I can pay less than what the loan is. You know, I mean, with interest, it gets tough when their loan maturity's up, they've ran out of money, occupancy has come down. And so like really the only choice is another bridge loan or another bank loan who's, you know, rates are 200-300 basis points at a minimum above agency debt, you know, and then you got to plan for a refi. I mean, there's just a lot of variables. And for the past 24 months, you know, we find a deal like that and, you know, maybe they paid $16 million and their loan was for 12 and, you know, they said, hey, we need to sell. And we'd offer them 14 and they'd say, no, we can't do that. And then 2 months later, they'd come back and say, hey, we'll take the 14. And then we're like, well, I mean, you know, rates are gone up again. Like we're at 12 and they're like, oh, we can't do that. You know, and I'm like, okay. And then, you know, 2 months later, they come back and hey, we'll take the 12. And I'm like, we're at 10. And then now it's in the bank's hands. So they're scrambling to try to find a buyer. So I don't know, you know, I mean, I think we'll see, you know, what happens this year. You know, I think maybe they lower rates a little bit, but I don't think it's going to be enough relief for apartment owners, you know?
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. So what do you see in like apartment space next 12 months?
I think that, you know, for us, I mean, rents have been just pretty stable. The focus has been on resident retention. You know, I think that being lean on expenses where we can, you know, being mindful of community events, right? Like let's spend a little extra there, but maybe we don't, you know, have a giant CapEx project right now. Let's just kind of see how it goes. You know, I think most of our communities, you know, people are still employed and, you know, I mean, I know rent's gotten expensive, but when they can justify it by living in a good community, I think they do. As far as operations go, I mean, I think the name of the game is just, you know, keep being a good operator. But for those that it fell apart, I mean, I think there's going to be some deals to buy. So
awesome. Yep. So would you share any best experiences so far in apartment investing space?
Again, as far as like operations are concerned, you know, I think you want to move quickly with your business plan. You know, you want to start touching the property and rebranding like as soon as you take over so that, you know, especially in a lot of situations where, you know, it hasn't been a good experience for the residents. So we want to show them like, hey, you know, we're here and, you know, our manager will go door to door like, hey, what do you need fixed? Right. And because sometimes fixing their problem also fixes our problem. You know, so you've been in units where the toilet's just running, the bathtub's running, you know, it's getting mold and they just stop caring because the management and owners didn't care. Right. So go around, let the residents know, hey, you know, we're here. We're well capitalized. We want to take care of you. And that really helps, you know, bring back sense of community and pride of ownership. And I think just, again, being well capitalized, I think that you're always going to find a skeleton in the closet. You know, I think doing a very thorough due diligence when you buy the property is extremely important. But, you know, I think that for us, a lot of times, you know, we end up finding not only bad surprises, but good surprises. We had one deal, it was a 120 unit deal. And it was, you know, I call it shoebox financials. You know, it was a mom and pop owned. They'd owned the deal for 20 years. They didn't even really use computers. They didn't really have financials. You know, the rent roll was in the manager's head. And they told us that it was 98% occupied. And they kind of wrote down the rent roll. And we negotiated a price that we were comfortable with without detailed accounting and detailed financials. And we went to our bank. This was a bank deal, a relationship bank, and said, hey, I don't have a lot of documents, but like they agreed to this price. And at this price, like, I think also you should be comfortable, you know, lending because here's our performer. Here's what we plan to do. In our due diligence, you know, we're walking into units 1, 2, 3. Next thing we know, we'd walked into 25, 30 units that day that were just a clean away from being rent ready. And, you know, we went to the leasing agent and we said, hey, I thought you said this was 98% occupied. And she was like, yeah, no, it is. And we was like, well, what about those 30 units? And she was like, oh, well, they're not ready. We're 98% occupied on units that are rentable. And we're like, okay. And in the back of our heads, I'm like, man, like you could spend $5,000 and get 20 units ready in a week, just doing a deep clean, put them on the market. But like they were operating this deal out of cash flow. So they didn't want to spend the $5,000. So they were just doing them one by one. And she, you know, she was like, man, as soon as we get a unit ready, it leases. And we're like, you know, you'll more than make back if these things are $900 a month in rent, just round up to 1,020 units. That's $20,000 a month in revenue. It costs you $5,000. So, you know, for us, that was like, wow, this deal just got better for us, you know? So we found other opportunities and other deals where we found, you know, some down units that weren't listed on the rent roll. So it ended up, you know, we were able to make two or three more units out of dead space. So, you know, just really being creative and trying to identify other opportunities that maybe, you know, other people might not see. And I think, you know, again, location is key. You got to be strong on the location.
Yeah. Thank you. So any challenging experiences?
We've had a lot. Probably my most memorable, you know, it's a good story. We bought that 16 unit deal and it was, the landlord was going every month collecting cash. And it was a cash property. You know, the units should have been condemned. So the types of people that were living there didn't really have anywhere else to go. So it was just kind of this cycle of, you know, it wasn't improving. We bought that deal. You know, I think a lot of people realize when you come in and you start making improvements, like, oh man, rent's going to go up. So we had quite a few people skip, which we were fine with. We started renovating units and we still had a couple of, you know, people that didn't meet our avatar in there, you know, that needed to move on. And we moved in a new person and the neighbors, you know, kicked down her back door and stole her TV and, you know, it was really bad. So she moved out. And so we said, okay, hey, we got to completely re-tenant this place. We got to take it down to zero before we can fill it back up. And it was kind of funny because we were painting the exterior and we got red tagged by the city and we called the phone number and they ended up putting us in touch with the police chief. And we were kind of like, oh crap, what do we do? And he was like, hey, I've been trying to get a hold of you guys. This property has been the magnet for drugs and prostitute and violence for this zip code for 20 years. Like, we see you're spending money. What can we do to help? You know? And so we kind of teamed up with them and we set up in one of the units, kind of like, you know, a coffee stop. So the police would come by, grab some coffee. They, you know, kind of have a presence on the property. And, you know, long story short, we ended up filling the property up and it was across the street from like a 5-acre park with a playscape and a basketball court. And when we bought the property, you know, there was already people out there at 10 in the morning, you know, selling drugs, you know, doing drugs, and there was no kids. And, you know, one of them even like chased our manager with a baseball bat. Like, it was awful. But at the end, when we went to take the pictures for the listing, there were kids playing soccer and people were swinging on the swings and like all of these things that like turned this crazy experience into like a really warm experience. So that was probably one of my favorite, hardest to good stories.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you. So any books that impacted your life?
I mean, Rich Dad, Poor Dad is still my number one. I give that book out on a monthly basis. People ask me how I got here and I'm, what's your address? And I'll ship them a book from Amazon. You know, I mean, it changed my life. That one, Who Not How by Dan Sullivan, that was really impactful for me. So yeah, just, you know, I say those are my top two.
Got it. Any habits helping you to be successful?
I try to get up early. And I try not to rush into work. It's very tempting to start tasking, but I try to meditate and I read 10 pages of whatever book I'm reading in the morning. And I try to get to the gym so that, you know, now I've had some me time before I can start jumping into, you know, solving problems and tackling stuff. So that's worked for me.
Yeah. Awesome. How can listeners can connect with you?
Yeah, our website, it's high5multifamily.com. I mean, we've got some of our past deals on there, our bios, and there's a link to get in touch with us and reach out and let's connect.
Yeah, sure. Thank you very much.
That's the end of this episode of Multifamily AP 360, but we'd love to continue to help you on your journey. Head to ushacapital.com/podcast to join our email list for more tips and strategies. And don't forget to subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. This is Multifamily AP 360 with Ramakrishna Chunchu. We'll see you next time.